This is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Welcome, everyone. Bob, Groz, and Tom for a Wednesday afternoon, officially closer to the weekend in front of us than the one behind us. I love when I host on a Wednesday and I can say that line that I used to say for many, many years.
Officially closer to the one in front of us than the one behind us.
Yes, 12:01. We're looking forward to this weekend.
Ah, I
we're
see.
Closer to the weekend in front of us.
Halfway through the
us.
Day. That makes perfect
a little
sense.
Yeah, thank you, buddy.
I like that.
That's Tom Wassel, the one and only.
That's the veteran in Groz. I appreciate that.
Tommy Gunn. We got a great show. David Schoenfeld of ESPN, their fine baseball reporter, is going to join us because baseball's in the spotlight. We've got Washington Wednesday, of course, and Washington's got an interesting game this week, to say the very least, and how they bounce back is going to be a huge story. Mark Johnson, the Colorado play-by-play guy, who the Buffaloes also went into their game last week, ranked number 19, undefeated. There was some talk. We had Golic on the national ESPN show talk about if they ran the table, could they be a championship contender?
Right, and they had to hope that Washington beat Oregon.
Right.
Because it would help them.
But they forgot about taking care of their own business and got drilled by USC, and they're in a similar spot that Washington is in trying to bounce back. So it'll be interesting to hear the perspective of Colorado coming into this game as well. And then Jake Heaps, who joins us every Wednesday as well, to talk pro and college.
Yep, and we'll talk a little bit with him, too, about what's next for Oregon and what's next for Washington State, because back-to-back
weeks. We're
not
forgetting about that game. It's a big weekend in college football. I mean, there's the bye for the Seahawks, sure, but you got a huge Washington game, and you've got the eyes of the nation on Pullman.
I will say this about college football. When the circumstances change as quickly as they do, that's exciting stuff. For Washington State, they're better than I think people thought they were going to be, better than I thought they were going to be this year. So the fact that this game has the implications that it does, very cool for them. Oregon, I don't want to say anything good about them necessarily, but that's a huge win, obviously, last week. Things have changed for them as well.
Yep.
And here's Washington, who now that they're out of the, well, not officially out, obviously, but it's going to be,
they're out of the college football playoff.
I don't think they have a shot at that. But certainly the conference championship, maybe the Rose Bowl, all that stuff still at stake here. So a lot going on for sure. But, Groz, I kind of wanted to start with the baseball playoffs last night. Now, did you make it all the way through?
I did not.
You didn't. When did you shut that game off last night?
I shut it off after the Machado play in the 10th. I was just too tired.
When he kicked, well, he didn't really kick him. He kind of just ran into Aguilar.
He kicked him.
Was it a kick or was he? Did he make sure his stride hit his ankle?
He made sure he dragged his foot, so he tried and knocked his foot off the base.
Okay,
that's what I believe. And those guys are, you know, it was made a far bigger deal by the Brewers than it probably was. The two, I don't know if the right word is combatants. I think it was Aguilar at first base.
Right.
They're buddies. They shook hands. There wasn't really an issue. The benches emptied anyway because. That's what benches
they
do.
Have to. But there was no clenched fist that I saw.
No punches
arms.
Thrown. And then afterwards, Yelich called him a dirty. The question is, Machado a dirty player? Came into the dialogue. I thought it was. I think that you've got both series now building something. I talked to Clayton about the Gibson home run, which was the anniversary of it was yesterday, and a home run in the ninth inning of the World Series is a big deal. But the fact that Gibson was walking wounded, was not expected to play, was not expected to even be on the roster, something other than just the home run makes it bigger. And now you've got this video thing happening in the Red Sox series with the Astros. They haven't played too many good games. You've now got some compelling stuff going on off the field. And the same thing with the Brewers and the Dodgers. Now their stuff is on the field.
Right.
So it's kind of building towards I hope two long series and great interest. So I think anything that happens to augment the games is helpful for baseball.
It's funny when we think back to what was it? It was 2007 when the Spygate thing came out with the Patriots. Mm-hmm. That came out at the beginning of the year, I believe, and that kind of followed them around the entire year. Here we have this scandal with the Astros, and for those of you who don't know, here's the story essentially: an uncredentialed Astros employee was discovered, I guess, next to the or in the media area by
the
Red Sox
dugout. Yeah,
right. You see where all those guys have the cameras. He was down there and feverishly texting and taking pictures. Presumably, that's what he's being accused of.
You know what the reasons were. They're saying the reasons are that the Indians had contacted them and said the Red Sox were the ones that were actually doing it in the first place. So they were trying to get evidence of it.
Right.
So.
Now here we have...
It's a tangled web.
It is, and the rule is that you're not allowed to have these electronic devices in the dugout for this reason exactly, because they don't want you stealing signs and or doing whatever you might be able to do
right.
with this crazy technology. I mean, the I suppose the possibilities there are endless.
Because the Indians, I guess, had accused the Red Sox of doing it in Game 3 of their series.
Right. But we I didn't know about that until yesterday.
I didn't either.
I think that surfaced as part of this story.
Definitely.
So there's a couple of different ways we can go with this. First of all, if this person is snapping pictures or gathering intel on something that he shouldn't be, what's your reaction to that, just from a cheating standpoint? Big deal? Not a big deal?
I need to know more details before it's a big deal.
Okay, because we don't know what kind of information is being stolen.
Well, the thing is, if in fact it's the reasons that have been given, they're not trying to steal info. They're trying to prove that the Red Sox are stealing info.
It's counterintelligence.
That's exactly right? What it is. Right, right. So if it's that case, how do you feel about that? Hey, look, Joe Torre's got to look at it. He's the one in charge. I think both managers have just said, hey, I don't know anything about it. Which is the right thing to say, and I don't think that they do. I don't think that they burden the managers with that. They've got enough to do in these games. Baseball's rules can help them here. You're just not allowed to do it, period. So you're fine to do things like that. There's not going to be any on-the-field ramifications for it, based on what we know so far.
I don't think so either. And just from a fan who now has this information... Right standpoint.
It's something else to watch for.
It is. It doesn't bother me from a, well, this the series is now stained in some way.
Oh, no.
Or
no,
tainted,
no,
right?
No.
You think, again, I'll bring it back to Spygate and gathering information, that type of crime. You could make a case that the Patriots won that Super Bowl against the Rams, a far superior team, presumably, that they won a Super Bowl as a result of that. You could make that case.
Right.
In this here, it's just too muddy. Like you said, it's a web. Well, what are they gathering? Why is he there in the first place? How much does it help?
The first thing you got to find out is the Red Sox have been accused of stuff. What are they doing?
Mm.
Because if the Astros are just doing counterintelligence, trying to prove that the Red Sox are doing stuff and not trying to gather information on their own. And by the way, stealing signs is a part of baseball.
If it's just stealing signs, then this doesn't matter to me at all.
Now,
if it's something else.
What else could it be?
I don't know. I'm not in the dugout.
What else could you possibly learn in a baseball game that would be a benefit to your team besides knowing what pitch is coming? I mean, there's nothing.
Unless you were recording conversations.
To learn what?
Graz, again, well, I don't know what all the potential variables there are.
Well, I think, but we're talking about, we know baseball. We know the game of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
What?
The game of baseball.
Oh, God.
We know baseball.
Drink.
We know, right. We know what you can get out of it, what you can learn to give yourself a competitive advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, shifts and things like that are obvious.
Right.
They happen on the field, so there's no competitive advantage there. Knowing how a guy's going to line up his pitchers, I mean, that changes based on how the game goes. So there's no real knowledge, there's no real value in that. It's not set in stone. You know what the roster is before the game, so there's no benefit there. The only benefit you can get, as far as I'm concerned, is if you know what the signs are.
I guess stealing signs have been part of baseball for so long. It almost seems like there's an honor code even in that odd little context.
Well, that's
right?
What we're talking about.
Yeah.
Using electronics is going beyond the realm, but in terms of a baseball game, that's all you can get.
I suppose.
Now, football is different. Spygate in football, knowing what plays are being called and everything like that, especially when teams script plays and things like that, and it is plays as opposed to baseball, where you're reacting to stuff, it's a different deal entirely. But baseball, I can't, maybe someone will text in what else you could possibly learn by a conversation between a pitch, now maybe if the guy's healthy or not. But, I mean, you're going to find that out on the mound.
Yeah, that type of stuff probably wouldn't matter as much in baseball as it does in football.
Everything's apparent in baseball. And, because the defense has the ball in baseball, and it's not about plays in baseball, it's about pitching and catching in baseball, there's just not the same amount of information to gather except for signs.
When the Cardinals hacked, and Curtis, maybe you can jump in on this, when the Cardinals hacked into the Astros database, I suppose, what was it that was being stolen there? What advantage
was
there?
That was player information.
Yeah, it was intel on players, scouting reports, all that kind of stuff.
That's different. Now, that's a different thing, but that's got nothing to do with how doing something in a game.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that was compromising an organization and their information on players and their scouts and things like that. what they're looking for, what guys look like to them. That's a different story. But what does that have to do? That has nothing to do with the game.
Nothing really. I'm trying to sort through this and understand. Is this just a nothing story? Is it just kind of interesting from an intrigue standpoint?
That's what I think. I mean,
yeah.
How
do they pull it off?
Unless the Bobby Thompson home run, was about stealing signs.
Yes.
And we now know that there's a great book about it, and we now know how they did it with a catcher out there in center field, and where the bleachers were way out there, and using the scoreboard. They had a guy spying on the signs and giving him, he knew what pitches were coming. And Bobby Thompson has said, well, I wasn't taking advantage of it. It really didn't matter. And here's the Giants, who were 13 games back, started doing this and went 45-12, I think, down the stretch. And then he hit the home run based on it. And if it was Ralph Branca, who gave up the home run, always said, and this guy I got to know a little bit, if it didn't matter, if it didn't help, why'd they do it?
Because
it did help. You don't do something that doesn't help. So, I mean, that was, if the Red Sox have figured out a way to steal signs in some clever way like that, then there's something to this story. But that's all it can be. I think it's what you said it was. I think it's just a distraction. It's just skullduggery.
Yeah, it's just something that maybe they're engaged in that may not make that big of a difference.
The only thing, like I said, I think, in my opinion, and the only advantage you can have in a series in baseball is knowing what pitch is coming.
We've seen the results of that.
That's legit. Nothing else is. And I'll be curious to see what David Schoenfeld has to say about this.
Yeah. When a major league hitter knows what pitches are coming, that changes. You see blowouts.
Sure.
Is what you see.
Well, you definitely can.
It's not like a slight difference. I remember I think it was game six of the 2001 World Series with the Diamondbacks and the Yankees. The Diamondbacks knew every pitch that Andy Pettit was throwing, and they won like 15-2.
Right.
Right? I mean, if you can get that stuff figured out, It's pretty darn easy. Now we'll get back to...
And it's okay to do it as long as you're just doing it by eyeballing.
Right, because you just have
They're flashing signs. You're allowed to steal them if you can.
Right.
If you get it through subterfuge, it's a different story. But that to me is the only thing that can actually impact the game. And I just think it adds a little noise. Noise is good.
Well, sure. I mean, we're sitting here talking about it. It's interesting. I was watching the Red Sox game yesterday when I saw that news come. Actually, one of our listeners tweeted it to me. And I did think it was fascinating. Now, let's talk about something else that's going on here, this whole thing with Machado. Because, again, when it comes to baseball, anytime there's a little wrinkle, there's a little bit of drama, intrigue, whatever you want to call it, I'm in. That whole thing with Machado last night, whether it was on purpose that he kicked Aguilar's ankle and he's become the villain now as a result,
sure.
And Yelich is calling him a dirty player in general. He said, it's a dirty play by a dirty player. I have a lot of respect for him as a player, but you can't respect somebody who plays the game like that. Maybe, maybe not.
He had a deal where he was accused of spiking a Red Sox. I forget who it was about a year or two ago. So it's not the first time with Machado. And look, I've looked at the video on it a dozen times. If you look at the video, he dragged his foot and tried to kick his left foot off the bag.
Oh, I think that's true.
I don't think there's any doubt about it.
I don't think there is any doubt about it. But the question is
how dirty a play is that?
Is it worse than when A-Rod slapped the ball out of Royals glove?
Not even close.
Because that affected the play.
Right.
And he was initially ruled safe.
That's right.
They had to actually get together and overturn that one. By the way, to this day, I'm shocked that they still overturned that.
I am too, to a degree.
But
then they started throwing garbage on the field, and they had to pull the teams off the
field. Right, at Yankee, they had every reason to just let that play stand, and they didn't, thankfully. But even think back a couple of years ago. Remember Chase Utley slide into second,
yep.
Ended up breaking the leg. Was it Tejada, I think, the Met shortstop?
Ruben Tejada.
Tejada. Now, I don't want anybody's leg getting broken or anybody getting hurt as a result, but I don't mind a little cheap shot in here and there.
Spikes flashing.
Yeah, watching Hal McRae go into second base and taking Willie Randolph out. I love that type of stuff in baseball.
Baseball is much like football, has legislated that out. I mean, the plays at the plate.
Mm-hmm.
Guys running over catchers at the plate. What used to be fantastic drama. Now gone.
It is gone, but I don't understand
the plays at second base like you're talking about. Now gone.
But I don't understand why the fans would react if it's some atrocity. It's like, man, we used to like that stuff. We can't let the baseball people who are trying to make it safer convince us that that's not exciting when it happens. It is.
I think it's more, I think baseball players and the teams have got more buzz about this than the fans do in general.
This seems you're right. It seems like a real inside baseball type thing.
And it didn't impact the game.
No, it didn't.
It was in the 10th inning. I mean,
he didn't score.
He didn't score. It remained 1-1. It was three more innings before he ironically scored the winning run.
Right. It was interesting when he got back on first base later. He and Aguilar talked it. Well, I don't know what they were talking about, well, but they talked for sure. They were chattering.
They both said afterwards they're buddies. That they've been friends for years. That was Machado's line, and they so there wasn't any animus on the field, but there is. But now it's something to talk about, and there's not much time to talk because they're playing. They're starting pretty soon.
Right.
I mean, they're playing that game this afternoon.
Sounds like the Brewers are pretty upset about it, though. I mean, Travis Shaw, dirty play. You saw the replay. He can say all he wants that he didn't do it, but it's pretty obvious he meant to do it. He's shown it multiple times throughout his career. I mean, it's just a dirty play. A kick to his leg right there, it was not by mistake. So whether they're friends or not.
The boos will be raining down at Miller Park.
Because we're definitely going back to Miller Park now.
Right.
I'm glad about that. I was pulling for the Dodgers pretty hard to win that game. Anytime a team goes up 3-1, yeah. You think, uh-oh, this could be over quick.
I think you want in both cases, you know, you've got some intrigue. You've got some off-the-field stuff that only pays off if the series go a long way.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, you know, in the Boston-Houston series, you really haven't had too many good games.
That game yesterday was good up until the Grand Slam.
It was good until that inning. Well, they got five in the inning.
Right. And that's exciting to see a Grand Slam in the eighth.
Sure it is.
The game is basically over at that point.
It was.
But.
And it was. But you've got some intrigue going in both series. So I hope it reflects in the ratings. Hope it reflects in interest.
Well, the deeper they go, I mean.
In theory, that always works.
If you go back, there's a good Wikipedia page that has all this stuff the stuff charted out. If a series goes seven games, you see a dramatic increase, even from just game six to game seven.
Sure.
I mean, it always works out that way, whether it's the World Series or the LCS or whatever.
You're a baseball fan. You remember that game sixes are often legendary.
Game sixes that lead to good ratings in game seven, right?
Yeah, and game seven sometimes doesn't live up to the drama
of
game six. But, you know, when you think about some memories, a lot of them are game sixes over the years.
Right, where you had the crazy stuff happening, the Buckner error or Fisk or whatever.
Carlton Fisk's home run, Mets night score, and the Mets win it.
Yep. So, there's plenty of examples. Too bad. Have the Mariners had a game six? Yeah, they lost.
They lost the game six in 2000.
The one where David Justice hit the home run off Arthur Rhodes, right? That was a pretty darn good. Now that was a clinching game.
Yes,
but still, that was an okay game, I guess.
Yes, it was.
Well, then 95, the 95 ALCS as well.
Well, that was yeah. they had it went in game six, but it was in theory a game seven.
No, it was a game six.
No,
right?
The ALCS against Cleveland.
Oh, I'm sorry.
They jumped out to the 2-1 lead, and then Cleveland won games. Four, right. Five, and six.
Kenny Lofton scored from second base on a wild pitch because Danny Wilson didn't get to the ball quick enough.
Ooh.
That's correct.
Sorry about that. Sorry to bring that up. So you got anything else on the baseball for now? We're just going to keep on watching here.
We'll keep on watching, I think. It's more and more interesting as it's going on.
It is interesting. I'll say one thing, though. The length of these games combined with the ungodly amount of strikeouts was a bit much last night. 32 strikeouts in that game.
Yeah.
It was a lot to watch. And the game was over 5 hours long, was it not?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean.
And the ratings have been down for the start of the postseason, just baseball speaking. And,
the postseason or these series, you mean?
These series.
Okay.
Compared to last year, you had Astros-Yankees. It was down. The Dodgers game was down about 18%. The Brewers-Dodgers was down 30% from Dodgers-Cubs. Astros-Yankees. Would have beaten the American League game by about 18%. So we'll see if that makes a difference.
Well,
now that you've got some off the field, you've got some other conversation points,
right?
Besides just the baseball itself.
We'll see if it continues into tonight. Well, I thought they should have thrown at Machado, personally.
They don't do that anymore.
Why not, Grant? Again, because like you said, it's just an inside baseball. They're cleaning that type of thing. Plus, it's in the playoffs. It's a little bit different.
It's all about money, man.
You can't be messing around.
Can't run the risk of ruining your nine-figure investment.
Well, it's not your investment if you're throwing at somebody.
Yeah, but someone might throw at your investment if you do that.
Even in the playoffs?
I'm not for it, Tom.
All right.
I'm not for it.
One more. I wanted to get back to one thing about Paul Allen here, just where we're talking about a potential change in ownership, because as the day went on yesterday, Graz,
lots of people weighed in on it.
Right.
Nationally weighed in on it.
Yeah, there were some reports, and you can take them for whatever you think they're worth, that it's likely that the team will be sold basically out of the Allen family. So we'll see how that works out.
I want to hear the Allen family speak up on this.
Yeah. I would think they will at some point.
At some point, I'm sure they will.
Right. But what is the... What does a change in ownership actually mean for a team? And before you even start wondering about it, this team's not going anywhere.
That's the thing that people used to care about in this town, and it's not going anywhere.
No, it's just there's a million reasons why that could happen to any given team. It's not going to happen here.
No, not with the fan base you've got, not with the support you've got, not with
right.
what you've developed.
The most likely
no concern
thing
with that.
The most likely thing that it changes, as far as we're concerned from the outside, is nothing. It may not change anything. May not.
In terms of how the team is run?
No, in terms of the result, the on-field result. They're not going to necessarily lose just because there's new ownership. If they start being cheap or something like that, that would change things.
Sure. But, I mean, so new ownership has a chance to impact everything, in my opinion. The one thing it won't impact is the franchises being here.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, that was the last time it was sold. That was a pretty big issue.
Yeah.
When Paul Allen bought it for $192 million, worth about $2.5 billion now, by the way.
So that was a good investment?
Yeah, it was a good investment. But, if you have new ownership, everything is possible. They can be cheap. You can have a guy who's bombastic, wants to be involved in doing things. All sorts of things can change.
But most owners aren't like that. We know that there's a handful, but most owners aren't that outspoken. Bombastic, as you say.
No, not necessarily, but it's just you're talking about the risks that you're running. Not the risk, but what could happen.
Right. I guess I'm looking at how high are those risks, though. How high is it that just because there's new ownership in here that all of a sudden they're going to make all the wrong decisions and the price of beer is going to go through the roof?
Oh, no, I'm not worried about the price of beer because it's already through the roof. You're worried about personnel decisions and things like that and new ownership. I mean, it didn't help in Cleveland. It helps in some places. It doesn't help in other places.
When did it not help in Cleveland?
Helped in Cleveland. When you get a different approach, you get a different approach, period. So it'll be interesting to see if that happens. And if you spend $2.5 billion on something, you have a right to have an impact on it.
If they keep winning, Schneider stays. Pete stays.
Unless
as long
the guy
as they
who
want.
Buys him hates him.
Really? You think that that's likely?
I'm not saying, no, I don't think it's likely. I'm saying it's a possibility.
Sure, anything's a possibility.
You're asking me, what can happen if the Seahawks, if they do get sold? And the answer is anything can happen.
Anything can happen. I'm really asking you what's likely to change. And I think that
Don't know until it's bought. Don't know until it's sold. Don't know until until you find out who the owner is.
Okay, well, if John Schneider and Pete Carroll are fired on day one of this new ownership, color me shocked.
I'd be shocked, too.
Okay. I just don't. I don't really see that happening.
But they might walk away. They might not want to be in the circumstance. I mean, you've heard Pete Allen. You've heard Pete Carroll talk about how influential Paul Allen was in the direction of the franchise. That he wouldn't have come here if not for Paul Allen.
For the people,
who's to say he's going to stay?
If Pete leaves by his own volition, different story. You're right.
But the impetus might be because Paul Allen's no longer the owner.
Mm-hmm.
That's a part of what you're talking about in terms of something changing because the ownership changed.
That could happen even if the ownership doesn't change, though, even if it stays where it
sure
is right
it could.
Now.
Although it seemed, do you think Pete Carroll would have walked away?
What, right this second?
Yeah.
No.
Or when his contract was up?
No.
So, I mean, we'll see. We don't know until we find out who the owner is and if, in fact, there's going to be a new owner. But new ownership means change no matter how anyone slices it. You will have someone with a different approach running that organization. And it's impossible to predict what kind of impact that will have inside those doors.
Inside those doors, different story. For anybody who's working over at the VMAC, yes.
That includes Pete and John and all those guys.
Yeah.
Your boss changing, your ownership changing impacts you, period.
Doesn't mean they can't win, though.
Nothing is precluded. So it doesn't mean nothing
Curtis,
is precluded.
Curtis, do you hear this? The sky is going to fall.
No. I mean, I'm agreeing with you.
Everything's possible.
Everything is possible, good and bad.
Is it possible the Cougs are going to win this game this weekend, Gross?
Very.
Does it feel like Coug fans are just happy to be there with
Beware.
Game day?
Oh, sure.
Or are they just being confident? Let's talk about it around
right.
the corner. Bob Gross and Tom.
You're listening to Bob Gross and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's Bob Gross and Tom. Talk a little Cougs here for a second, Groz.
Yep.
It is Washington Wednesday, by the way, so we will be speaking with Colorado play-by-play man Mark Johnson coming up at 2:30. Get his take on where Colorado is after that loss. But it's a pretty darn exciting weekend for Coug fans with College Game Day being in Pullman, Oregon coming in. And I was trying to just go back through recent history and figure out what's the biggest win they've had in a long time. And last year they actually had a big one with USC, right?
Who's that?
Washington State.
Washington State's beaten Oregon three straight years.
Right, but
buried them last year.
But Oregon has been down a little bit the last couple of years.
Yeah,
too.
They have been. So that's a fact.
Right. But and text us 710-710 on the Coors Light text line on this. Are you just happy to be in this situation, or are you confident that you can actually win this game?
I don't know why you wouldn't be confident you can't win this game. Like I said, they've beaten them 3 years in a row. The line is even or 1 point in Washington State's favor. I think it opened with the Cougars as a 2-point favorite. So, of course, you believe you can win the game.
The Coug fans are around the building here, just some of the people I've talked to. I'm only talking about three or four people. But the vibe I got was that they're just happy that this event is taking place with game day and that it's a big game and happy about all that. And they think they can win, but they're not confident.
Of course, game day is a big deal because it's never been there before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big deal anytime. I mean, Mike Leach talked about how he had his first experience with game day in Lubbock when he was with Texas Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And they beat number one Oklahoma in that game. And just how much the community kind of, you know, responded to it. We talked about it, how it's become a great tradition for ESPN. And every place that it goes to, which is a small town, there's a tremendous amount of excitement about it. So it's a unique experience from that sense for the Cougars because it's so exciting. But we talked about, you know, Washington State being a program that's never really been a program that's maintained a lot of success for a lot of years running. Mike Price did it for a little while around the turn of the century, but it was usually you get a good class and then you'd have to rebuild, and that's not the case anymore.
Right.
So for fans, it takes something to get used to. But, you know, I mean, I don't know how confident you are in a pick'em game anyway if you'd assume, well, we got them for sure. If it was a game that you were a big favorite in, of course you'd feel a little bit different.
I just think that any Pac-12 game, whether the teams are competitive or not, you go on the road, if you're Oregon, for example, you can run into trouble. Look at what happened with Washington and UCLA a couple of weeks ago, right?
Sure.
That game was at least difficult, and I would say this game is far more competitive just on paper, right, between Washington State and Oregon.
Sure it is.
And we'll ask Jake Heaps about this later on.
Oregon's had very little success against Washington State in recent years, so, I mean, you've got a new coach, but, I mean, you've still got a lot of the same players. It'll be interesting for me to see if they adjust. Leach in his pre-conversation about it talked about Oregon still doing a lot of the same things, maybe not doing it as quickly as they used to. I mean, Oregon used to be all about playing fast tempo. They're not doing that as much
as
they have. But anytime you're playing a team, you beat 33-10 the year before on the road, I believe. Again, it probably was not against Herbert, if I'm remembering correctly, who makes a
– No, it was Burmeister.
Yeah, that makes a pretty big difference, obviously. But sure, there's some confidence from Washington State.
Yeah, I would be. I mean, and again, we talk about big wins. What's the biggest one they've had in recent memory? Well, they've had a handful. But this one just, you're talking about maybe being the Pac-12 champion. It takes on new meaning with the Apple Cup. Should that happen? And
sure it does. The national spotlight is there.
Yeah, just to me, coming from the outside, it always seems like Coug fans are waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Well, that's because it usually does.
Okay, is this weekend that weekend? Would that even qualify? I mean, again, it's a home game. You probably should win. You're good enough to win it. But it's also possible that Oregon goes in there and blows your doors off. That would be a classic example of the other shoe dropping, would it not?
Yeah, that'd be a big surprise if that happened, in my opinion. But you're certainly right. It's a possibility. What's more likely in terms of a negative, if you were going to talk to Cougar fans, would be to lose the game sort of the way Washington lost it last week. To have a controversial coaching decision and miss a field goal or have your kicker have a really bad day or just make inexplicable series of mistakes that somehow manages to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
Speaking of which,
that's cooging it.
Well, Chris Peterson actually did talk about that. I was a little surprised he admitted this.
We've practiced that exact situation for probably the last 8 weeks. That hash, that situation, call and timeout. Now, you know, the games are different than practice, like we always say. So we really did. I mean, I think everybody, you know, on our sideline thought we'd get that done. But, you know, for me to have a do-over, knowing what I know now, to get the ball a little closer for him, yeah.
Well, don't say knowing what I know now.
What does he know now that he didn't know before?
He missed the field goal.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
that's what that means. It's like, well, knowing he's going to miss the field goal, I would have gone for it. Well, of course you would have. That's not really an admission of mistake.
It isn't?
We've practiced that exact situation for probably the last 8 weeks. That hash, that situation, calling timeout. Now, you know, the games are different than practice, like we always say. So we really did. I mean, I think everybody, you know, on our sideline thought we'd get that done. But, you know, for me to have a do-over, knowing what I know now, to get the ball a little closer for him, yeah.
Yeah, knowing what I know now, what does he
knowing,
know now?
Knowing what I know now that we lost.
Right. What else could he be referring to?
Well, if there was something going on in the kicker's head or whatever. But he knows he's a freshman. He knows what his range is. He would have known all that stuff.
The only thing he knows now that he didn't know then was that he's going to miss the field goal. So, of course, knowing what he knows now, he'd do it. But he just spent the entire setup there talking about how they prepared for this exact scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So if he didn't know what he knew now, he would have done the same thing.
The question is, would he do it again?
That's a better question.
Because
what would you do in the future?
Yeah, because if you do run this all the time and you think that your kicker's got the leg and he's got the head for that situation, would you do it again?
Yeah, and he's a freshman, for crying out loud.
Frosh. Can't trust him. Would you be surprised if he did the same thing again? Same exact situation.
Yes.
His quarterback's playing out of his mind.
I'd
second
be shocked
half,
if he did it again.
Driving
it
down
when,
the field.
I was shocked when he did it in the first place. When he had all that time on the clock and had his quarterback playing the way he was playing. It was a big surprise.
Yeah.
I was, anyway, watching
the game. I wasn't shocked by it, but it did jump out at me. I thought that they could have run another play, not been as conservative as they were.
And you knew they were going to call timeouts to ice the kicker. I mean, you knew all of that.
They called two timeouts.
Two timeouts.
Yeah, that is kind of a weird
Washington
thing.
Called one. They obviously set
right.
him up. And then they knew Oregon had timeouts and was going to do that. It was on the road. Your quarterback was hot. I mean, you had 35 seconds and a timeout. It was a mistake.
Miss, make, miss. Miss, make, miss. All right, Graz, which college football coach turned an 11-year-old into a national joke?
I can only think of one.
Okay. Wait a minute. What's next?
It's Bob, Graz, and Tom.
Hold up. Hold up.
Hey, wait a minute.
What?
Wait a minute. Now.
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Gosh.
Wait a minute. What?
Wait a minute, what? I'm Bob Graz and Tom. You know, Graz, for all the discussion we've had about London and will a team move there or not, who's the team we always hear that could move there? Right, Shad Khan. He's the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
He's going to buy
Wembley Stadium.
There, right.
Well, he released a statement today saying he's withdrawing his bid to buy Wembley Stadium, citing a lack of support from the FA Council. The council is a 92-member elected group which decides the major policies of the FA, the governing body of soccer in England. So does that tell you that that issue is put to bed or that he might be still interested and might just want to build somewhere else?
Well, you're not going to be able to build a new stadium in London.
Because there's no room. I mean, look, that would be a pretty darn complicated endeavor.
I don't think he's building a new stadium in London, if that's what you're asking me.
Well, I mean, I'm saying if he really wants a team there, but he isn't going to buy Wembley, I'm wondering what his alternatives are. I'm not sure he has any. I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah, I'm not sure he does either, to tell you the truth, Tom.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he does either.
So that makes me feel better. It means that for now, no team's going to move over there.
Yeah, and I think that's still a very unlikely scenario anyway. I always have. But, yeah, I would think that, yes, that would make it more unlikely that a team is going to move there for sure.
Even after all the stuff OCU Manura said the other week?
Even after all the stuff OCU Manura said the other week.
That everything's going to be fine and the NFL is going to be there in 2020. Well, no, it won't be the Jaguars. We'll see who else. Next story here, Lane Kiffin.
Yeah.
Now, this is one of those stories that we see these once or twice a year.
Oh, this is, I know where you're going with.
Yeah, this is him offering a scholarship to Matt Leinart's 11-year-old son, Cole. My only question about this, because this stuff is just not binding, it's nonsense. What is the point, what's the advantage of him doing that? Is there an advantage to it? What's he thinking?
If I knew what Lane Kiffin was thinking, it'd do me no good whatsoever. I have no idea what he's thinking. I mean, he's trying to create buzz for his program, trying to create attention. What is he, at Florida International or something like that?
Yes. Or FAU, excuse me, Florida Atlantic.
So he's just trying to create noise. I mean, it's silly. It's ridiculous. It's absurd.
It's a way to recruit or get a buzz on social media.
Yeah, it's to create a little attention, but in my opinion, it really reflects very poorly on the program.
That they would use, that they would exploit an 11-year-old kid just to get a quick,
just
a quick
a little
cheap
buzz.
Thrill,
I mean,
I guess.
It kind of speaks to everything. It's a reminder of how nasty recruiting and how distasteful it is,
right,
in my opinion.
Did Leinart, Curtis, would Leinart have played with Kiffin or under Kiffin anywhere?
Yeah.
Was he at USC?
At USC.
He was there at the time.
I believe Sarkisian was Leinart's offensive coordinator, but I believe Kiffin was on Pete Carroll's staff.
He was on staff there?
Yeah.
Okay. Because, I mean, it could just be a nice little gesture. But, I mean, the idea of recruiting an 11-year-old kid is absurd in and of itself. But if you're doing it just for publicity, there's something smarmy about that, but I guess that's what college football recruiting is.
Unfortunately, you're right.
Just in general. You want to know what Von Miller's attitude towards the Cardinals game on Thursday is?
I mean, last 2 weeks, I mean, we had a 200-yard rusher. You know, I get where he's coming from, but, you know, that was the last 2 weeks. You know, this week is totally different. We're going to get everybody's best this week. They're going to get our whole team's best, and that starts with me. They're going to get my best this week, and we're going to go out there and we're going to kick their. This is the way I'm feeling.
Well, is it a must-win, Vaughn?
I wouldn't say it's a must-win. We're going to kick their though.
I don't care if we win it. We're going to kick them around. Okay.
Yeah, this is the first one on paper. It doesn't look like it's going to be very good, does it?
No, it looks like it's going to be dreadful. I mean, unless Josh Rosen is still an interesting player, if we're just talking about young quarterbacks and what might they be. He made a lot of good throws against the Seahawks.
He did.
We know that.
I don't know what he did last week.
I didn't watch at all.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and again, like we've seen even with Baker Mayfield, you take a step up, you take a step back.
Especially if you're a rookie.
Right. Josh Allen goes out there and gets knocked around. That's the type of thing that can happen there. So, yeah, I agree. There seems to be a randomness this year, Gross, to some of these primetime games between Sunday, Monday, and Thursday as to whether or not they're going to be competitive. Even if on paper it looks like it's going to be good, sometimes it isn't.
Right.
If it looks like it's going to be bad, sometimes it can still be
competitive. Well, it can always be good.
Right.
I mean, look, the 49er-Packer game looked a lot better when the year started. And then they play it, and you got a 500 team against a 1-4 team.
Mm-hmm.
And it winds up being really entertaining.
Yeah, because of the officiating. Because of the way the game... I mean, that's like we talked about yesterday. C.J. Beathard throwing for 300 yards.
Right.
He's helped by the fact that a lot of these DBs are just pulling up.
Yep, they are.
Right? And Aaron Rodgers was helped, obviously, on that last drive. The penalty against Sherman, that every defensive back on the field is frozen as a result of it.
But... Von Miller's a character, man.
Here he is.
Denver, Arizona, I mean, it's hard to have any interest in that, isn't it?
Yes, it's extremely hard. And now, I'll watch a little bit of it if it's close, but now Case Keenum came out of the last game they played at one point. I think it might have been because of injury, but he's another guy who, if they have any kind of playoff aspirations at all, they probably need to look at sitting him at some point.
Well, he was their whole plan this year. I mean, that was John Elway, you know, going to the well with a veteran quarterback who had been a backup his entire career and had one great year with the Vikings. A great year with the Vikings.
Yep.
And it turns out that was it.
Did you see Elway in the press box at the Oregon game the other day?
Yeah.
How'd you like to be Herbert looking up there saying, oh, okay.
I'll play for him.
Yeah, exactly. That add any juice to your performance? See, oh, Elway's up there watching me. Better play well today.
What makes you think Herbert even noticed that?
He's
watching TV on the sidelines?
No, if anybody might have let him know. Hey. Guess who's up there?
Yeah, I'm guessing he probably didn't know.
Maybe not during the game, maybe after.
Yeah, after the game, you probably find out.
But it doesn't matter. He's going to go to the Giants anyway.
He's going, whoever picks first is likely going to take him, I would think, at this point.
Who gets the first pick, Giants or Raiders? Actually, forget about first pick, but who picks between those two teams first?
The Raiders.
Okay.
I don't see.
But will they pick a quarterback?
That's a good question. Depends on how much Gruden likes Carr or doesn't like Carr by the end of the year. Still a lot of football to be played, as they like to say, Tom.
In the game of football?
Well, no, I wasn't going to say that.
All right, we're going to talk about the game of baseball next.
Yes,
what's going on in the playoffs? Dirty plays, espionage, etc. with our friend David Schoenfeld. I'm Bob Rosenthal.